Okay, motherfucker!
What are you looking at, sir?
I'm looking at you, miss.
Run that, baby.
I'm not the Zodiac. And if I was, I certainly wouldn't tell you.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Imprint Companion, a podcast companion series to Imprint Films, boutique Blu-ray label here in Australia. We're going through the second batch in our March, or February, should I say, releases. February releases. I know what I'm doing. It's just late at night. My name is Alexi Toliopoulos, and my brother in blues, it is Blake Howard sitting across from me. How are you, my dear friend?
I'm good, friend. I'm very good. This is a good batch. I'm really excited to finish it off with you, but the first part of it was such a smashing one. I'm excited to be back to talk more Imprint and intimidated, frankly, by Imprint Asia, Imprint TV, Imprint Films. March discs are already with us, so we've got to get these bad boys out and check out the amazing March batch and catch up. But it's been really great.
Yeah.
How are you, more importantly?
I'm good, but I'm excited about these big things happening with Imprint Asia. I'm so excited for so many films. I can't wait to dig my freaking mitts into Imprint TV. I'm just gonna say it. One of the best TV shows of all time, The Prisoner, has been announced as an Imprint TV release.
Oh, yeah. And what's even more exciting about that for you film nerds out there is that the rumor mill is saying that Christopher Nolan, one Academy Award-winning director of Oppenheimer, is looking at The Prisoner as his next thing to
Are you serious?
Adapting it into a film. Yes. So it is.
I didn't hear that. That's crazy.
The rumor mill is saying that Chris Nolan is doing that. So I don't know how firm that is, but it was something that he'd mentioned was in his suite of potential projects coming up. So it just was a confluence of beautiful events that has come out. So I can't wait for you and I to check it out, chat about it, and maybe anticipate some Christopher Nolan adaptation at a future date.
I love The Prisoner, so I can't wait to see it. And Imprint, if you're listening, send it to me ASAP. Can't wait to watch it. But let's get into what we've got left for this batch. We're going to talk about two movies, really, and by two quite beloved filmmakers.
Yes.
We're going to kick things off with a film from Bob Rafelson, a key voice of the American New Wave movement, making many of Blake Howard's favorite movies, I do believe. Mm. You had a chance to catch up with Mountains of the Moon.
Sir, allow me.
Allow you what?
To join your expedition.
An explorer and a gentleman on a quest to reach a place no civilized man had ever seen.
What's this?
One came in search of knowledge.
Be offended. It's a blessing.
The other, in search of glory. Two strangers, made brothers by a savage land. Two friends, made enemies by a civilized nation.
2 weeks ago, Spink committed an act of treachery.
He saved my life many times.
Well, then go to him.
Triumphant by their courage and loyalty. Together, they would risk everything to make history in the mountains of the moon.
Two strangers made friends by a savage land. Two friends made enemies by the civilized world. In the 1850s, two British officers, Captain Richard Burton and Lieutenant John Speke, set out on a spectacular adventure to discover the source of the Nile. As the difficult journey takes its toll, Burton and Speke forge a strong bond, a bond that one will eventually betray. What a interesting blurb, Blake. Like, that seems like not the kind of movie I would ever anticipate from Bob Rafelson, who I think of as a contemporary filmmaker and a filmmaker who makes slow, deliberately paced cinema. Does Mountains of the Moon challenge those ideas?
Yeah, massively. Like, Bob Rafelson, if you don't know, like, Five Easy Pieces, one of my favorite movies, The Postman Always Rings Twice, King of Marvin Gardens, Stay Hungry.
Head?
Head, 1968. I mean, right, like, literally putting the boot into what is going to be New Hollywood. Incredible resume of films. This is an incredibly interesting one because at face value, you're like, why is the key voice of the new wave going back to make this sort of British explorer film that is very much like completely too kind of completely fish out of water, traveling through the African continent to discover something that had never been discovered, or at least from the Western conception of never being discovered? Why is he even interested in this? And, you know, I think what it is the two key performances. You've got Patrick Bergen, who plays Richard Francis Burton, and you've got Ian Glenn, who plays John Hanning Speke. If you may not recognize the name Patrick Bergen, but everyone knows Ian Glenn recently from, you know, the whole Game of Thrones thing. He had a massive career resurgence with that, and he then went on to make, I think he starred as Batman in one of the recent Netflix, you know, adaptations, you know, Teen Titans or something like that. So he's definitely been around. What is fascinating about this is that Richard Francis Burton's character is like this complete cad, this icon of exploration. Ian Glenn is like, as John Hanning Speke, is like a soldier, and they join forces and come together, and he sort of forges this, like, he brings him under his wing as an explorer, and they forge this like weird relationship. And Burton is well-traveled, speaks multiple languages, is excited to do this and is excited to break new ground. And Speke is kind of like more straight down the line and moral. And I think what the Bob Rafelson of it all is for me is these guys have a really weird relationship. It starts out as like a mentoring relationship. It borders on a loving relationship, like a physical relationship. And so it's quite chaste. It's not quite like Brokeback Nile. Like, it's not quite that, like, it's not that, but it's touching on this thing of these two men who are completely outmatched by the continent of Africa, having to contend with just diabolical conditions, self, you know, inflicted torture, essentially to fulfill these visions of becoming, you know, discovering the source of this great river, and having to travel in a way that is, you know, whether you're going to die by crossing into new nations with tribes, people that are going to kill you, or just the elements are going to kill you. And it just really, it's an interesting dynamic of just watching their relationship forge and what they feel is like is eventually betrayal. It also stars a young Fiona Shaw, who is basically in everything. She's recently in True Detective. She's Harry Potter's evil auntie in the Harry Potter films, if you've seen that.
Andor's mom.
She's Andor's mom in Andor. Like, she's around. And I just want to say this very respectfully on our podcast. Young Fiona Shaw, good evening. You know, hello. Wow. Respectfully.
Good night, nurse.
Good night, nurse. Hello. Young Fiona Sailor. Shaw. Seriously. Outstanding. But yeah, so this was a film that was exceptionally well received at the time. Like, even Siskel and Ebert at the time, two of the best American film critics and the biggest behemoths, gave it hugely positive reviews. Richard Burton is a fascinating character. Speke is a fascinating character. And I think, honestly, it's a little bit deceptive about the betrayal, because it's also really interesting to just show, like, these guys, under the pressure and under the environment, they have this kind of, like, almost like they've been away at war mentality, and they come back to civilized society and they're drastically less civilized, or perhaps more, rather, because they're a bit more world weary and they know, like, how close life and death is, and the reality of life and death is sort of crystallized by Africa. So when they go home, they get in this weird, dumb competition with one another about who has the right to the exploration plaudits. And so it does some, you know, really interesting and and sort of weird things about how they get sort of twisted against each other. It has cinematography by Roger Deakins. It is stunning, quite frankly, to look at. Has an incredible, like, extensive cast. Also has Delroy Lindo playing an African slave.
Love Delroy Lindo, one of my favorite actors of all time.
One of my favorites too. He barely says a word, but he's in a stack of the movie. It's just, it's a real curio. So I don't know if I love it, but I would absolutely say that it's a really interesting and very contemporary feeling take on a historical epic. It is questioning things like colonization and their outlook. It is being pretty harsh on the scrutiny of, like, do they belong there? And what is even the things that they do mean? Because, like, when they go back to England, they're these conquering heroes, but we see how desperate and broken they are. And I think Raffleson just has, like, an eye almost like 20 to 30 years before it was popularized of, like, tackling a kind of story like this with a kind of, like, you know, anti-colonialism lens, as well as then going into the deep humanity of these people and how kind of weird and wonderful and peculiar they are. So, yeah, it's a really interesting one. I would say, Lex, if you haven't seen it, and I know that you've seen a lot of the other Raffleson's too, if you haven't seen it, it's very much worth your watch. It is not what you're going to be expecting. And I think what's cool is when you go in and go, if you look at it through the lens of why did Bob Raffleson make this movie, it's an even better watch because you're like, oh, okay, I'm seeing the dynamics. I'm seeing how this guy who was like a new Hollywood guy is taking his approach to a kind of Lawrence of Arabia epic and spinning it in unconventional ways. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. I had a good time with Mountains of the Moon.
Fantastic. Well, I might have to check it out.
All right. Next up, our final film for this batch. It is a film that I'm going to say right off the bat had to have been a gigantic influence on Birdman. Inarritu's film starring Michael Keaton is directed by the legendary director behind The Hot Rock, Friends of Eddie Coyle, Peter Yates. It is The Dresser.
Columbia Pictures presents Tom Courtney and Albert Finney in The Dresser.
Sir.
Mr. Gunstone, let's make up if you please. You're playing the Duke of Venice, not the Queen of the May.
World War II. Britain struggles for survival as a great actor struggles to go on.
How much further do you want me to go?
Only one man can help him. The Dresser.
Shouldn't we be getting to the theater?
The world sees only the performance. The Dresser sees the pain, the struggle, the humor, the vanity.
You good legs. Higher. Lock the door.
You sure he's well enough to go on? He seemed quite deranged.
Sir, deranged? Never.
Master and servant, patient and nursemaid, the star and his dresser. A great actor faces the most devastating crisis of his career.
You're put through it night after night, and I haven't the strength.
His dresser faces the most difficult challenge of his life.
Struggle and survival, you say. It's all that matters, you say. Struggle and survival. We all bloody struggle, don't we?
The whole world's struggling but the Bible, the wiser and you.
They give each other the power to go on, to survive. Every year, one actor creates a role so outstanding that it is forever etched in the minds of audiences everywhere. The miracle of a great performance. This year, the miracle will happen twice in the same remarkable film. Tom Courtney, Albert Finney, and a superb supporting cast, Eileen Atkins.
It's a disease. What is hopefulness?
Does the costume fit? You look.
Lockwood West. Xena Walker.
Louder! He wants it louder!
Night. Night.
Edward Fox.
Death to all times.
I heard that, Mr. Oxenby.
A film of love, comedy, triumph, and devotion.
Right, so I'm here. It's Norman.
Columbia Pictures presents Albert Finney and Tom Courtney in The Dresser, the hero behind the man. The Dresser.
Lex, tell me what you thought of The Dresser.
I really like this a lot. Dare I say it, I love this movie. Yeah. I think that it is one of the better kind of backstage dramas I've ever seen, just because it's about something very specific, which is this odd symbiotic relationship between a major star of the stage, played by Albert Finney, and his dresser, played by Tom Courtenay, who, God, he's been in a lot of movies, a lot of David Lean films, but probably best known as a star of The Loneliness of a Long Distance Runner, classic kind of like angry young men British film. So he's a very complicated actor. And I think it being about something so specific in the way that these two live together and share one life, in probably not unlike the way that you described the Mountains of the Moon as well, the key relationship there. So maybe it's an interesting pairing putting them together, that they, like, you know, when we say symbiotic relationship, this is like a true version of that, where one cannot live without the other. Yes. They live for each other. They exist for each other. And for that to be not really explored in like a romantic way, more in this kind of complete codependence and coexistence, I just found it really fascinating. And I think that this world that this is set in the backstages of this long-running touring Shakespeare company during the London Blitz, I think it captures a great period setting only witnessed like in The Wings, that I found really interesting, really satisfying. And the moments we see them on stage reciting Shakespeare, magic, great stuff. Albert Finney as King Lear, come on, you don't get this any other way. But there's also this humor to it, because people are familiar enough with these plays, you kind of just know how they're going. But there's these like deep moments of pathos that really got me. And it's about Albert Finney's character aging, like it's, he is
deteriorating at an accelerating rate.
Yeah, quite rapidly. And you're just seeing him get worse and worse and worse. And some of the best acting I've ever seen Albert Finney do. And he's one of the best actors. So I think it's really worth watching for that performance. But there's this great moment where he is putting on all the makeup for King Lear. And it's in that era, in that stagecraft Shakespearean way, where, yes, he's got a dresser helping him, but he is applying all the makeup on himself. He's putting that glue on so he can put this facial hair on. You're seeing him slowly transform into what this character looked like. And he's doing it by muscle memory, but he's getting some things wrong. He's forgetting some things. And I think it was just like beautiful performance, great acting, because it's the way he's playing anger in these moments and frustration, and the way Tom Courtenay is either egging him on or assaging him, and the way that kind of passes in and passes out. Just thought it was just some of the best acting I've seen in quite some time. And we often talk about films on this podcast where it starts hitting in a certain way, where you have to start letting people know that this movie exists.
Yes.
And usually it's like, Blake, you got to check this one out. I'm messaging my boys like Cam and Mitch and stuff, going like, I just saw a movie you're absolutely going to love. I had that this time. The person I messaged was my mother-in-law, my partner's mother, going, have you seen this movie? You will absolutely love this film. So that is who I'm passing on this disc onto next. My lovely in-laws, because I think they'll absolutely love The Dresser. Blake, you, like me, are a big Peter Yates fan.
Yeah.
Dare I say, maybe the great genre journeyman filmmaker of the 20th century, because he's not really an auteur. He jumps around a lot, but his entries into cinema are just fantastic. He's one of the best journeyman filmmakers. What do you think the Yatesian touch was to The Dresser?
The big one is, and this is the key for me, is along with Sir Alan Bates, Albert Finney and Tom Courtenay were the three, like the holy trinity of what became known as the British kitchen sink dramas that emerged in the 1960s. And so Yates, for me, is returning to England and making he's kind of using in the set. It's so funny. Like, it's almost like we've found what the pairing is. With The Mountains on the Moon, it's a 1968 sort of new Hollywood filmmaker telling at this time in his career, telling a story like a throwback story and bringing sort of a contemporary lens to it. And I think that what Yates is doing is also that kind of displacement, which is telling a story of actors and telling a bit of a kitchen sink drama, but like tying himself to these two guys and knowing that if I just lock these guys in a room for long enough, drama is going to happen. And so for me, it's like his most, you know, for a guy who goes on and does, you know, so many genres all across the world, I think this is such a uniquely British take and film. And it just has these actors in it who he just knows have this level of explosive authenticity that for me, that's what it is. It's like, how do I go back and make, you know, with not someone like Chris Nolan, it's like Dunkirk. How do I go back and make my Dunkirk? Well, this is, in his way, it's this kind of explosive kitchen sink drama take, using the tenets of that sort of genre and spinning it through this prism of making this like stage door drama. And so for me, like when I look at his career, he has so many, like just an unbelievable resume.
Some of the best movies of all time, like Breaking Away. We haven't even said the words Breaking Away out loud. Bullet, and that might be his best film. Bullet.
Like he even made
Krull. I love Krull. I love Krull. I think Krull rocks.
And so, yeah, like, I think that that's what it is. It's taking, and I think exactly as you said, it's like the setting of it, the self-importance of actors and their role in society, the confluence of that British kitchen sink drama, and taking this back to like very simple. He studied at RADA, so he's very familiar with, you know, traumatic art and working with actors and what that means. And so for me, it just feels like, how do I stay in touch with all of those elements of my history and past and interweave it into this thing? And so for me, it just, it really hit me here because of the deterioration. And I think that Albert Finney is a spectacular actor, like number one, but number two, his portrayal of deterioration and what he can grasp and what he can't and what he's obsessed with and just how he's literally, and I think you mentioned the words muscle memory before, Lex, his life is literally being stitched together and held together by the sticky tape, the scotch tape of muscle memory of doing these damn plays so many times. And so, yeah, I had such an amazing time with The Dresser. And I would just say to anyone who is actually, who watched Birdman, who liked Birdman or something like that, I was watching, I was like, oh, Birdman ate this movie's lunch. Like in a big way, like it, yeah. I would not be surprised if Inarritu saw The Dresser and was like, you know what? I'm doing that. Like I'm going to do a movie that can say so much about acting and performance and ego and all those things. And then, but you know, he's doing it from a more insular perspective of like what theater is and theater critics and this and that. And talking more about the film industry, it becomes a little bit like navel-gazy. But this is sort of centering the importance of art in the face of way bigger things. And I think it's all those things, you know, it's almost like a genre defying movie in many ways. And I totally feel like it's him reaching back to some other part of his experience to do it. And, you know, it's a good 10, 15 years from when his career really kicks off and he maybe has the clout to kind of go, you know what, this is truly one for me.
Wow, very nicely put, Blake. That is The Dresser. Absolutely loved it. Cool movie by a cool filmmaker and one that was completely unexpected to me and a great, great film. Like we kicked off this episode with, there are many exciting new developments coming from Imprint almost every single month. So keep your eyes peeled and keep that wallet open is the unfortunate side of this. There's too many things to keep tempting you.
Can I just say there was a great tweet from someone quoting about some of the recent glut of amazing physical media releases, and they just said, I can't remember who it was, otherwise I would credit them, but it was something like, do these people know that I need groceries? Like, do they know that I need to continue to eat? And I'm like, yeah, I hear you. We're gonna be back soon. We've got the first batch of Imprint Asia to come up, but we've also got the Imprint March bundle, which features movies like Green Ice, Cold Steel, Let's Get Harry, Batteries Not Included, Strange Invaders, and The Ravagers. So they're all coming up in March. And then I'm just going to go and see if I can find the first Imprint Asia bundle pack, which includes films like Lost in the Stars, which is it's the most recent Imprint film. It's from 2023. The Sea is Watching, which is from one of Akira Kurosawa's final scripts. And then from 2003, The Blind Swordsman, Zatoichi. So very exciting stuff happening in Imprint Asia. So from contemporary stuff to older stuff, I'm super excited.
And that Zatoichi reboot is from director and star Takeshi Kitano. If you love Japanese cinema, you love Takeshi Kitano.
The best, the legend.
Yeah.
The legend.
Yeah. When does that first batch come out from Imprint Asia?
That is also a March batch. So we have two. There's Imprint films in March, and then there is an Imprint Asia March. So we are going to be seeing. We're going to be averaging around 9 films a month.
God almighty. Pray for us, friends. Until next time, Blake, it's been a pleasure chatting through these discs with you.
Always a pleasure, my man. Can't wait to talk to you in March about all of this stuff. And guys, thanks you so much for listening. Lexi is at This Is Alexi on Twitter. We will never call it X. Instagram. Follow him on Letterboxd as well. Always has insightful short little takes on stuff. You can also follow along and see what he's up to. You can see me on Letterboxd and at One Blake Minute on Twitter and Instagram as well. Follow Lexi's great other show, The Last Video Store with Batuta. You can just search that up on YouTube or anywhere there. And if you're not listening to this one on One Heat Minute Productions feed and you're on the Imprint Companion, check out oneheatminute.com. We've got a whole bunch of great shows that include, some of them include Alexi Toliopoulos, from All the President's Minutes to Zodiac Chronicle to this great show here, Imprint Companion and Blues Brothers. So we'll catch you on the next episode very, very soon.